Awesome. Well, we want to welcome you to our workshop today on the relational leader.
Good morning. I know you guys have already had a few sessions this morning, so thank you again for spending your time with us. So my name is Michelle, and this is my husband, Anthony. We've been married for almost 18 years. We have two children. Our daughter next week will be 15, and our son is about to turn 13. So we're in that fun stages of teenager life, which I'm really excited about. Actually, I like teenagers, so it works for me. We are both site pastors at UBC, one of 10th locations, and so that's kind of where we spend our time in our ministry, working out on the campus with students and faculty and the people who actually live in the neighborhood. So we're excited to have this time with you this morning to talk about what it means to be a relational leader. I think it's a very relevant topic, especially for our culture today. I don't know that there's anything that you're going to hear this morning that's rocket science, that's probably not already familiar to you, but this is a time for us to kind of pause and just give some intentional time to recognizing what it means for us to be a relational leader in our lives, whether that's the people that have imparted into us, or within your own context, how you can be a relational leader to the people around you. And so that's our hope this morning, is that we can kind of reflect on how people have shaped us in relationship and what we can take from that as we continue to live our lives and lead people towards Jesus.
So just as we start, when we talk about this whole area of leadership, I don't know about you, but when I hear that word, I sometimes feel like that. There's so many questions, so many different ideas of what leadership is, what makes a leader, how do you define leadership, what types of qualities. And so there's sometimes all of this information that is out there in terms of what leadership is about. And so last year, if you were here, we talked about leadership with one simple definition. And you didn't have to be here last year in order to take it this year. But I want to come back to the one simple definition. This is not an exhaustive definition of leadership, but I believe it's a great starting point for what we're going to talk about today. And so I want to circle back to the idea. And so this was literally the definition we came to. Leadership is fundamentally about moving people from here to there. Now, you may not have heard leadership described in that type of term before, but I believe that it's a great fundamental beginning point for when we talk about the idea of leadership. And so it moves people from here to there. I want you to hear kind of the motion that's around. It's about a journey and a movement that begins happening. And so leadership is this journey and intentional going from a starting point and going to a destination point. I want you to quickly think about the context that you are in. As a parent, maybe this is a longer-term leadership assignment as you're taking your child all the way through to adulthood. It's a journey, and you are moving them along all of these different stages. Maybe you're a Sunday school teacher at 10th, or maybe a different context. And so leadership might actually look like an hour on a Sunday morning, that you are leading kids from one point, from the moment that they walk in the doors, to when they leave. And what type of a journey are you taking them on? Maybe as a youth leader, you're spending time walking a youth through a crisis. And so leadership is this very broad and yet I think very intentional part that at the end of the day, we are moving people from one place to another. And in between those two points, from here to there, everything else begins to take place. That's where visioning, creativity, crises, challenges, growth opportunities. So it's a very broad, and yet I think a very great starting point for that. And so leadership is about movement, and it's about movement with people. Leadership does not have to do with just structures and policies and all of those. Fundamentally, leadership is about people, and it's the journey that we are on with them. Leadership is directly tied to discipleship and what it means to be a follower of Jesus himself. Because if we are going to follow Jesus, then he also calls us to walk alongside other people. We want to quickly give you two definitions that we had talked about last time, but I think they're helpful for framing this workshop. And so one of the original Greek words for disciple means one who learns. That's kind of the broader, most common aspect of discipleship. But I think it's a helpful reminder for us that as we follow Jesus, and if we're going to follow him and also go along with others, then we need to continually be learning ourselves. We don't have it all figured out. We're going to make mistakes along the way. We're going to come across challenges. But the very first and foremost part of our own discipleship, but also our leadership with others, is that we are continually learning and growing and stretching and moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And there's a second word that's used in disciple. I can't talk right now. Sorry, there's a second word that's used in the definition of disciple, and it's actually a compound word made up of two, and it's union and way. And it describes a person who is traveling in the same direction as someone else. It means to walk alongside another person. In fact, it means to share the same road. And that's the piece that we want to talk about this morning. What does it mean and what does it look like for us to walk alongside someone? And what does it mean for us to journey together with them? And what does it mean for you and I to be a relational leader? Our calling as followers is to lead people more towards Jesus. And we do that by walking in relationship with people on the same road.
One of the things what we don't have time for is to get into a lot of the biblical underlying parts. So I'm going to introduce it, and then with the hope that as you leave from this place, that you will do some of your own study as you read through the Gospels, as you read through the New Testament. And so I just want to give you a couple quick points, but as you look at the biblical story of relational leadership and the relational leader, at the end of the day, Jesus lived it. He modeled it for us. He was a relational leader himself. And I think a great starting point is the reminder that Jesus is God in human skin. And so he walked alongside of people. God didn't just come as a voice. He didn't come as just this charismatic personality or voice talking to us. But he became present to our very world. And I think that's such a huge reminder for us that as we are called to do the same. And because Jesus is God in human skin, he understands and knows what we're walking through. And because of that, he calls us to walk alongside others. He's a God present with us. And I love it that so often, and this is a fascinating study, that Jesus' own ministry was done, and there's this phrase that keeps coming up, along the way. Jesus so often connected with people in formal situations. He would teach in synagogues, or he would teach to crowds on a hillside. But most often, when you look at Jesus' own ministry, it happened in impromptu conversations, in interruptions, in things that happened along the way. And if one fascinating study is and I just did this quickly this past week, go through the Gospel of Luke as an example. And look at how many times that Jesus is heading in one direction and heading off maybe to teach somewhere or to do something. And a person comes along and Jesus doesn't say, well, I'm too busy. I've got something here in front of me. I'm going to go do it. But he stops and he connects to that person. And there's one story, and it's funny when you look at it just from a relational leadership standpoint of a guy where Jesus is heading off to do ministry and mission. A guy named Jairus has this daughter who is sick, and so he asks Jesus to come, and so Jesus responds in that moment, and as he's going to do that, he gets interrupted a second time by a woman who has this issue of blood. And so you could say that Jesus' own interruptions get interrupted, but I think it's this beautiful picture that he was always responsive, always present to what people were going through, where they were at. And so I would really encourage you to do this on your own time. Walk through the book of Acts or through one of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and just look at how Jesus actually interacts with people that way. So just wanted to give you a little bit of the framework for that. Well, why the need for relational leaders and leadership? Well, we'd argue that the culture and reality that we are living in today really makes that need for relational leaders that much more critical. Just as one example, and there are myriad that we could pull from, but families, and this means the kids that you're working with, the teens that you're working with, are spending less and less time together. Shouldn't be a real surprise there. And especially when it comes to face-to-face meaningful types of conversations. This is not happening when you look around at most family units. And it's really those interactions, those face-to-face conversations, and really getting into this relational aspect, that's what brings change and transformation and growth in people. And that has a huge impact on relationships and formations. There was a poll that was done in the UK. You can find different ones, but we picked this one. 2,000 parents, and this was back in a couple years ago, 2017, that showed what a typical average family will experience in any given week when it comes to having conversations together. And here's the breakdown of that particular poll. Before school, 9 minutes conversation. After school, approximately 14. Dinner time, 11. And if you've got young kids, bedtimes get stretched out. That's when kids surprisingly want to start talking, isn't it? So you add that up. And so just from this one kind of snapshot of 2,000 parents, they were finding on average up to maybe 44 minutes a day of conversation. And this is not significant type of conversation. This is more, hurry up, brush your teeth, get out the door. You know, what do you want for dinner? How was school? How was your day?
Do you have homework?
That's a good one as well. Well, how much of that do you think is significant? It's important, and it's great to have these types of conversations. Now, the reason we do that is, and point that out, is you contrast that with the amount of time being spent on digital conversations nowadays with what kids and teens and everyone else and adults are walking through. And that's where you see the gap happening. And that's where you see why the need for relational leadership is so critical. In 2019, Common Sense Media, which is a nonprofit research organization that focuses on entertainment and technology issues, released their recent report called the Common Sense Census, Media Use by Tweens and Teens. And so when you look at social media, online gaming, YouTubing, TV, screen entertainment, so on, here's what they found from the most recent poll in 2019. Tweens, 8 to 12-year-olds, are spending on average 4 hours and 44 minutes per day online in digital types of conversations and interactions. Teens, 13 to 18 years old, 7 hours, 22 minutes on average. Can you already see where the gap is beginning to take place? When families are connecting very briefly on these quick conversations, maybe 40, 45 minutes on any given day, and kids are then finding their connection, finding their community, finding all of these, again, online, we're seeing where that gap begins happening. James Steyer, who is the chief executive officer and founder of Common Sense Media, kind of analyzed it this way. He said that these kids live in this massive 24/7 digital media technology world. It's shaping every aspect of their life. They spend far more time with media technology than any other thing in their life. And then look at these words. This is the dominant intermediary in their life. That's a big statement that's there. And so there's this need that we intuitively know as we look around that there's a need for relational connection, face-to-face connection.
Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't take much to connect the dots here. You know, of course, before Instagram and social media, teens definitely kept themselves busy. In fact, teens would often hang out or go to the mall, and parents back in the day would think they're up to no good. But the thing is, they were actually having face-to-face interactions with one another. It might look like aimless hanging around, but what kids were actually doing was experimenting. They were trying out their skills, sometimes successfully and sometimes failing at them, but they were tons of tiny real-life interactions that kids today are actually missing out on. Modern teens today are learning to do most of their communication while looking at a screen, not at another person. And this is a huge, huge concern moving forward in our society today. Dr. Catherine Steiner-Adair is a clinical psychologist and author of a book called The Big Disconnect. And she says this, as a species, we are very highly attuned to reading social cues. There is no question kids are missing out on very critical social skills. Texting and online communicating, well, it's not like it creates a non-verbal disability, but it puts everybody in a non-verbal disabled context where body language, facial expressions, and even the smallest kinds of vocal reactions are rendered invisible. This is really significant when you talk about being a relational leader. In our society, children are learning a very flawed sense of reality and relationship. communication skills, interpersonal relationships, and the actual ability to navigate sometimes challenging conversations are crippling. And because of this, it induces anxiety in people, more so in children and in youth, and that is an influence and a distraction in their lives. Coupled with the pressures for success, acceptance, and connection, we have all sorts of studies that show the exponential growth and increase of social media affecting things like I just talked about, anxiety, worry. This is a huge one, low self-esteem, the comparison that is done online, what children begin to tell themselves that they need to be or how they need to be or what they need to look like. These are the influences that are dictating to them their self-awareness. It also leads to depression, mental health issues, self-harm, and tragically, over the last number of years, we've seen a significant increase in suicide. These are really, really significant things that you and I, especially as a church, need to wake up to and to understand that we have a role to play in meeting these needs. There is a longing that kids have for deep connection. They want to be seen, they want to be heard, they want to be understood, and they definitely want to be listened to. And most of all, they look for a safe place. And most of our kids in our society today are finding what they think is a safe place behind the screen as they interact with people. The need and the opportunity for relational leadership has never been greater. And I want you to hear that this morning. The need has never been greater than it is in our culture today, where kids need to have that safe place where they know that they can be heard and understood. Our kids, our youth, and our young adults, they need caring and wise voices to speak consistently and significantly into their lives. They need people who are going to walk alongside them in all of their questions, their doubts, and their situations, and who will speak with them and lead them towards Jesus.
And I hope that even just in these first couple of minutes that you're beginning to sense within kind of yourself this recognition of what I do matters. As I meet with youth, as I meet with kids, whether that's my own kids or someone else's kids, that this can make a significant difference. This might be some of their only significant times that they have to come and to actually not be taught, but to be walked alongside, moving from here to there as we lead them towards Jesus. In March of 2015, Harvard's Center on the Developing Child research arm released a study that said every child who winds up doing well has had at least one stable and committed relationship with a supportive adult. That's a key finding. Every child who winds up doing well has had at least one stable and committed relationship. You're going to hear this quote in just a second. We have a video of a young guy named Josh Shipp, and you may have seen him before. He's a youth motivational speaker, best-selling author. He did a TEDx talk called Every Kid is One Caring Adult Away from Being a Success Story. And so we just want to show you a clip of how, again, just one person made a difference, a life-changing difference in his life. Give me one second to pull this up, and we should be good to go. Josh Shipp, S-H-I-P-P. Johannes is coming down here. Not quite sure where the audio. He will be down here in just a moment. Just while he's doing that, just quick comments. Have you seen this take place in your own life, this need for relational leadership, for conversation, for connection? Okay, for sure. Have you seen that played out in connections with kids as they come in, that perhaps some of them haven't known even how to carry on conversations, or they're just pull out their phones right away, or maybe just a couple quick comments from people. How have you noticed that within your arena, whether that's at home, church, school?
How do you gain the attention consistently?
Yeah, exactly. and the attention span is getting shorter and shorter. Yeah.
It's good to go when you're ready.
Yeah. Great observation. Johannes, are we good to try it? Okay, perfect. Okay, let's go back here. Sorry about that.
I tried to kill myself with a bottle of pills. And the fact of the matter is, I trusted no one. And looking back, I guess, how could I? From the time my parents left me, to the time another foster kid raped me, to the time I was bullied so bad, I genuinely could not fathom a world where I could trust anybody. So fast forward, here I am, 14 years old, and entering my umpteenth foster home. I was a pro, a veteran at this whole sort of getting kicked out of one home, moved to the next. You meet these people who were like literally complete and total strangers 10 minutes ago, who are now apparently your mom and dad. You know, kids don't take candy from strangers, just move in with them. So I'm sitting in the van in the driveway of this next home, and that's when I see Rodney. He's standing up there on the front porch, and immediately I notice this is a large fella. He's 6'5", he's 350 pounds, and as a 14-year-old boy, I couldn't help but notice when he's turned to the side like that, he's shaped like a lowercase b. It's amusing now, but in the moment it was tactical. Maybe that's how I could get kicked out of this home. Maybe I could get under his skin about his weight. So I move in with him. I'm being obnoxious, I'm being ungrateful, I'm being just downright rude and mean, I'm setting things on fire, and 3 years later, I can't shake this guy. Rodney won't kick me out. So I step up my game. I go to the local bank in town. I open up a checking account. I put about 90 bucks in there. Then I proceed to write $10,000 worth of checks. Obviously, checks bouncing one after the next after the next. One check that bounced was for my car insurance. I'm going down the road speeding, Stillwater, Oklahoma, 88 miles an hour. No car insurance, no driver's license. I get pulled over, handcuffed, thrown in the back of a cop car, and sent to jail. I call Rodney. Like, Rodney, I'm in Stillwater, I'm in jail. I'll tell you the whole thing when you get here. Can you please come bail me out tonight? He said, I will come bail you out, but not till tomorrow. Rodney frustratingly believed sometimes one of the most loving things you could do for a kid was allow them to sit in either the success of their wonderful choice or the stupidity of their foolish choice. Next morning, he comes, bails me out, exactly as promised. We have a long, very awkward car ride home. No one says anything. We get back to the house. He's like, we need to sit down and talk. And I knew this moment had finally come. So Rodney, his wife, sent me down to give me the talk I've had a dozen times. He looks in my eyes and says, son, you can keep causing problems. You can keep trying to mess up. You can keep pushing us away. You can keep trying to get us to kick you out of here, but you've got to get it through your thick head, son. We don't see you as a problem. We see you as an opportunity. And in that moment, all my skepticism came to the surface. And I thought, what a cheesy, stupid thing to say to a 17-year-old kid. But then I was overwhelmed with the reality that this guy actually meant it. He didn't see what I was, what was on the surface. The obnoxious kid, the ungrateful kid, the kid getting suspended. He saw what I could be. It was genuinely my turning point. Statistically, I am supposed to be dead, in jail, or homeless. But because of one caring adult. I'm not a statistic. Every kid is one caring adult away from being a success story. Every child who winds up doing well has had at least one stable and committed relationship with a supportive adult. My friend and mentor, Reggie Joyner, taught me to think about it this way. In this jar are 936 marbles. Each one of these marbles represents a single week from the birth of a kid until that kid turns 18 years old. So if you know a 9-year-old, you've only got 468 marbles, or weeks, however you want to look at it, remaining. You know a 16-year-old? You got 104 marbles remaining. Right here, we are looking at time. In fact, you're looking at all the time or all of the weeks you have left to influence this kid, or this kid before they turn 18 and begin making critical life decisions without your presence. The difference between a statistic and a success story is you.
Good. I've watched that a couple times, and it impacts me every time. So I want to ask you, having just watched that, what are some things that stood out to you or that spoke to you when you just took that in? Anything stand out to you? Yeah, that you can make a difference in somebody's life, for sure. Anything else that stood out to you in your own context, whether you're a Sunday school teacher, a parent?
And God's wisdom.
Yeah, you have to have God's wisdom to get through it, absolutely. Anything else?
And you never know when is that turning point.
Yeah.
You just keep doing it, keep doing it.
So true. Yeah. You know, it's so important what she just said. You never know when that turning point is. And the truth of the matter is your interactions with the people that come along your path, you're not responsible for their turning point. But when God gets a hold of them and you're consistent in their lives, whether that be for that hour on a Sunday morning, whether that be you're a grade two teacher and you only have those kids for that year, whatever that is, that sphere of influence that you have can make a difference. And whether or not you're aware of it, that child is aware of it. And that's the significant part. Thank you for sharing that. Is there any other thoughts? Anything else that stood out to you? Yeah.
Not giving up.
Yeah. Right? How many times do you just want to give up? Because it's not easy. And let's be honest, working with kids and teens can sometimes be frustrating, and you think you're influenced, you just keep doing the same thing over and over, but the key is consistency. He anticipated Rodney and his wife kicking him out. He's like, this is it, the ball's dropped, I'm done. But that's not what he was met with. He was met with consistency. He was met with grace and mercy and said, we're not done here, I'm not giving up on you. Go ahead, Anth.
So just a couple of realities for relational leaders. Again, this is not anything surprising, or hopefully it shouldn't be, but what you do matters. Mm-hmm. And we want to thank you for the investment that you are making into the lives of kids and youth, as a parent, into your own kids, that those interactions are significant. And as was pointed out, you never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to take place in that conversation or with that environment. Your interactions will leave an impression, positive or negative. You can't help, but it's going to do something. Every time that we connect with people, it's going to make something a positive deposit or a negative one. Your investment in time makes a difference. Again, that's why we wanted to take this time, even in this workshop, to just pause and reflect and say, when you go into a classroom or you go into a youth group or classroom or wherever it's taking you, this is important. Those conversations, for that kid, that might be their one conversation that they have that week. And to have a listening voice or someone that says, I believe in you, or I can walk alongside of you, it makes a huge difference. Maya Angelou, phenomenal poet, you've perhaps heard this quote, but she said, people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. That's a huge thing. At the end of the day, people don't always remember that great lesson that you gave or that great sermon or anything else, but they will remember how you made them feel. Just want to tell you a few stories of kind of how that has made an impact on some mm-hmm. people's lives.
So in grade four, and I'm going to date myself as I share this, Michael Jackson was the big thing. And so I had my grade four teacher, Mrs. Colvin. She was amazing. She was a rock star. I think we have her picture here. So this is her. But when I was in grade four, she still looked like that. She was an amazing voice in my life. Now, I can't stand here today and to tell you that this is exactly what she said to me, but she left an impression on my life because of how she made me feel in the class. You may be aware of this if you've ever studied psychology, but grade four is a pivotal time in the brain development of a child. It is a time where a child goes from the world of fantasy to reality. So it's a very significant turning point in development of one's brain at this age. But grade four, she was the teacher who brought in the TV and gave us Michael Jackson breakdancing lessons. Totally, right? We had the one glove. But anyway, all that to say this, in that year, our principal, who is a young man, suddenly died. And Mrs. Colvin was a presence in our class that helped us as children navigate this sudden and unexpected loss. She made me feel safe in that classroom as I was trying to discover myself and who I was as a kid and trying to grapple with a sense of reality versus the imaginary. She allowed me to be who I was. She often encouraged me. She would give me a hug. She would check in to make sure I was all right. What I remember most about Miss Colvin, of all teachers that I've ever had, is that she made me feel important, she made me feel heard, and she made me feel safe.
Shortly after Michelle and I got engaged, I had gone to her church and met a friend who was on staff with her, a guy named Bill. And we shook hands, and the very first words out of his mouth were, "I notice your last name is Yackel." And he said, "By any chance, do you know an Esther Yackel?" I said, "Yeah, that was my grandma. She passed away a number of years ago, but that was my grandma." And he said, "Okay, I need to tell you a story." He said, "Back when I was in grade four in Saskatchewan," he said, "your grandma was my grade four teacher. And it was Christmas time." He said, "I was cast as the lead for the Christmas play, the Christmas pageant that was happening. And on the day of the concert, I got sick." It's one of those childhood diseases. I don't know what it was, but he couldn't perform. And he was devastated. And so my grandma, who is a Christian, and just kind of understood this part, she had all of the class write him letters. Letters of encouragement, just saying, "Hey, Bill, you know, we're cheering for you. Hope you get better. Thinking of you. Don't get discouraged." He said those letters made such a huge impact on me. And years later, he has still performed in dramas. He loves acting to this day. And he told me that that became a pivotal turning point in his life, of these words that were spoken into him, you know, through disappointment and through everything else. Here's the amazing part. 55 years later, he still has every single one of those letters. He saved them. Here's the point. We don't necessarily write letters today, but we do have digital letter abilities, and we can utilize technology for things. I can't tell you how many times where you're thinking of someone and just drop them a quick text, drop them a quick note saying, "Thinking of you." Now, again, that may not necessarily work at a kid's level or a kindergartner that you're probably not going to be texting them, but think of a youth context or other places of those words that we speak. You never know how they're going to make a difference and a significant impact. 55 years later, Bill is still talking about it. Wasn't anything major, wasn't anything life-shattering, and yet it was life-changing. And so it's those little things that we do that can make a huge impact on someone's life.
I want to share with you just a relevant story in our lives right now as parents. So we live in Langley. We live a little bit of ways away. And for us to get onto UBC, we have to leave pretty early in the morning. We're up at just after 5, getting our kids up. That's fun, teenagers, that early in the morning. And get them up and out the door. Well, I'm going to tell you this. At our site, we have a master student who has seen our kids, and she has come out early just to talk with them, connect with them. She's come on her own time, and she's come to take them out for coffee. She's had these interactions with them that have left our kids feeling valued. She even had them over to her house recently to make pancakes. Now, Nevin, our son who's 12, made an epic mess, but they laughed about it together, and they had these interactions together. And this is a situation where nobody asked her to do this, but she saw an opportunity to speak life into our kids in this situation. And it's been a gift for our kids. They're going to always remember this girl who took time out of her life to interact with them, to make them feel valued and important and seen, and not just stuck in the shuffle of all that's happening. On the flip side, we also have the ability to leave negative imprints on people's lives if we're not careful. And so I share this with you to say that in the same place that we serve, there's also an individual who, while trying to maybe connect or be funny, has actually left some negative impressions for our children. So in the same sense, you have someone who's invested in them and is seeing them and recognizing them and valuing them as people. And we have another individual who is actually has some expectations on our children that aren't necessarily realistic, who has left them feeling like they've been gotten after and that they're not doing a good enough job, and has actually made our children feel a little less than. They have been embarrassed at times and even shamed in front of other people. Same environment, same context, and yet our interactions with one another are significant. They leave an impression, and this is what I want you to hear. You may have long-term interactions with people, but majority of life is these little interactions along the way. And so it's the little things, the little actions, the little words, and the little moments that make a long-lasting impression and a difference in someone's life. I want you just to take a moment and to think of someone in your own life who has made an impression on you, whether that's a lifelong impression or just little spurts of interaction with you over your life. And I want you, if you have a pen and paper, just to write their name down. And I want you to take a moment to think about how they have made you feel, whether that's encouraged, whether that's they've made you feel valued, whether they have allowed you to feel important or significant. I want you just to take a moment right now to think about someone in your life, whether that's your journey as a child or now as an adult, who has made an impact on your life and how they have left you feeling. What is it that they gave you? Did they give you a sense of self-worth? Did they give you a sense of knowing, excuse me, that there's a purpose in your life? Perhaps did they leave you feeling really excited? You know, as a kid, there was a lady in our church. I got excited when I saw her because she'd always give me a candy. Yes, right? But it was our little thing. It made me as a child feel like I was seen, to know that somebody else thought about me. So in the same way, I want you, as we finish up this session here this morning, to think about people in your life that have impacted you. But then I want you to take it a step further. And I want you to think about the people that maybe you interact with every week. That maybe it's just been a kid that you see and you give them a high five each week. But be aware of it. Be cognizant of maybe those that you have an interaction with every week. Whether you're a crew leader, whether you help at youth, whether you're a teacher, whether you're a parent. Those little things are touch points that we have as an opportunity to make a difference and an impact. In the same way that if someone has left you feeling valued, you have that same power and influence to impart that into someone else who's in your life.
Just as we begin wrapping it up, I want to leave just some final thoughts in terms of growing in relational capacity. And you can quickly jot these down and take them with you. But just some statements here that being a relational leader requires us to be present, not perfect. Engaging with others doesn't require us to mean that we have it all figured out, especially that we don't come across as having all the answers, because we don't. Remember, we are learners along the way as well. But it does require us to be willing to be used by God just as we are in that moment. If you've seen the Mr. Rogers movie, I'm not going to play the clip right now, but Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood with Tom Hanks, it's fantastic. And there's one moment where he is talking on the phone with someone, and the guy's like, well, we can reschedule this, you know, and schedule a time, Mr. Rogers, when we can talk more. And he said, there's nothing more important than what I'm doing right now in this moment. and that's talking to you. And thought, what a beautiful sense that that is, that we can get distracted by, got to get through things or got to get on to the next thing, but just take that moment, be present in the moment. Doesn't have to be perfect, but it's those little things that over time just begin adding up and making a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. How do we grow in relational capacity? It's by understanding the value of authenticity and vulnerability. This is where you and I get to share from the stories of our lives, both the positive things, our flaws, our joys, and begin to recognize what the other person might be going through. We're able to use empathy as a means of connection, and that is what draws people in. We also grow in relational capacity by recognizing the power of our words, our time, and our presence. This is very significant, and I think sometimes we bypass this and think it's not of value. But we have to recognize the power of these three things, our words, our time, and our presence. Sometimes, like we talked earlier, we can feel like we're not making a difference, like we're just kind of doing the same thing over and over. But what we invest in someone else is so important. Each word, moment, and our present attention are actually the intrinsic value that we deposit into another person.
Prioritize people, not things. I will say this has been a challenge for me in my own life because I like getting things done. I like accomplishing things. I like feeling like I've gotten to the end point. Remember, it's going from here to there and bringing others with us. And so if we prioritize things, we're going to, a lot of times we might get something done, but at the end of the day, it's things getting done and people not being touched. And so it's always taking that moment and saying, where do we learn? How do we grow? Bringing other people along with us. And so just always keep that in mind. It's about people at the end of the day, and we can keep going there.
And we grow in our relational capacity when we're asking questions, when we're listening, when we're caring, and most definitely when we're showing empathy. Listen to this. It's when our awareness of the other person becomes greater than ourselves. And this is a beautiful part of relational leadership. It's always about the other person and what you have to instill into them and the value of your time and presence in their lives. I don't know where this little write-up is from, but I wanted to share it with you. I came across it last week, and I thought, oh, this is so good. It says this, when someone is broken, don't try to fix them. You can't. When someone is hurting, don't attempt to take away their pain. You can't. Instead, love them by walking aside them in the hurt. You can. Because sometimes what people need is simply to know that they are not alone. That's what it means to be a relational leader, that you walk alongside people in moments. Some of you will be called to lifelong influence, but majority of us in this room are going to be called to being a relational leader in moments that come across our paths. Friendship requires a certain amount of risk-taking. Friendships require us to be willing to navigate difficult conversations, to face problems both big and small. And it requires courage to share what you're feeling and to be able to hear and receive what the other person has to say. Online relationships nowadays are literally stripping away the most personal and intimidating aspects of communication and leave kids crippled and anxiety prone. I want to share with you this quote by Rachel Emke. She says this, if kids aren't getting enough practice relating to people and getting their needs met in person and in real time, many of them will grow up to be adults who are anxious about our species' primary means of communication, talking. This is why it is so important for you and I to be relational leaders, because that is a face-to-face connection that allows children, teens, young adults to develop their skills, to know what it means to interact and to relate. Being a relational leader is not always a glamorous role, But it means that we need to be present, and it means that we have a value of our time and our presence and our energy to connect in relationship with each other.
Our time's up. This is the final thoughts here. More than ever, as we talked about, the need for relational leadership is critical. At any point in our culture and time, it's now. What you do makes a difference. You can get discouraged, you can be frustrated, but you are actually making a difference in these people's lives. Be present, be in the moment, recognizing it's the little things that we do that over time are going to make that journey from here to there. Let's pray. Jesus, I pray that this time together would be a reminder, an inspiration, a hope-filled place and space that you've called each of us to make a difference, because you've made a difference in our lives. And so I pray that in the coming weeks and months and years, that as we connect with people, that we would be present to them, that we would be people who care and talk and walk alongside, because we know that we are on a journey together, a journey that's going to take people deeper towards you. And so I pray for every person that's in this room that you would give all of us a renewed sense of what it means to be alongside and to be that person that can speak truth and life and most of all love into them. And so I pray that you would allow these thoughts just to continue to spring up and germinate within each of us. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you so much for coming. Enjoy your lunch. I'm sure it's needed a break right now, and then it starts again at 1 o'clock. So again, thank you for joining us today.